welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And even though I do it a lot, and I probably do it too much, what I probably need to do is I need to do one dedicated show just on the debt. And I probably need to do a dedicated show just on the legitimacy of our government. The seats that we have in the constitutional framework, those are legitimate seats. What the people are doing in those seats is not legitimate. If they're taking bonds, those types of things, there's lots of things that they're doing that is not doing what they're supposed to. They're supposed to be supporting this Constitution, and the problem is they don't even know that they're not, because they've all gone into this this facade of our government, what these evil players have done over the years in drifting our government. And the court has been huge. This is why we cover a lot of content. And so we'll get into that in just a second. Actually, I want to cover the content. Let me just cover this real quick. Learn, pray, and act. We're asking you to, you know, to utilize your faith in restoring our constitutional framework so that we can actually restore this republic, as we call the show, Reclaiming the Republic. Now, one of the things that we do, and what we kind of cover, a curriculum. And for this week, we're actually covering Thanksgiving. And so this is a hard set thing, just like Christmas, Labor Day, those types of things. We really do try to give you the historical context to why the federal government is actually, because every holiday they invoke upon the nation is unconstitutional. Do they have the ability? No, they do have the ability to call upon the nation to consider taking time voluntarily, but to mandate federal time off, a federal holiday that the employer has to pay somebody, that is repugnant and a violation of the Constitution. It's an assumed power they don't have. Let's get all the people to protest the fact that we're getting these holidays. You know, free money? Are you kidding? Folks, we're the problem. We are the problem. And I'm going to tell you, the government's just going to keep, they'll just say, nobody has to work anymore. We're just going to print money and let you spend it. And watch what happens. We will literally become the early 1900 Germany when they had to burn their money to just stay warm because nobody could afford anything. Then their money was worthless. So one of the things we want to do is we want to get you specifically this week to reconsider. One of the things you can do is no longer buy into the gluttonous holiday that they have inflicted upon us. That's why we're going to dive into this. You know, and I know people, you know, if you live in New England, that is a traditional holiday, or a traditional way to give thanks. And it doesn't have to be a part of the national call to actually give thanks for this nation. That was something that they did for the state and for the colony that they were creating and so forth. But some of the things that we also cover, we also cover, and this is our curriculum. We cover the Tory Acts in January. January 2nd is when we cover that. You know, if we have a show on January 2nd, I will dive into the Tory Acts. I try to also cover this concept of the scale of liberty so that we actually have one show that gives you the details of the scale of liberty. So when I reference it, you can always go back and listen to that. Now, this is something that was extrapolated, or I kind of extrapolated as I was kind of struggling to help people understand, you know, we don't have all of these different ideologies, you know. When we look at, you know, these philosophies, the philosophers have created these little niches of different philosophies, and they're all, you know, these little own chasms that they create. And actually, no, there is basically one philosophy, and that's the philosophy of liberty to subjugation. That's the way we function. And so the scale of liberty kind of covers that. We try to cover natural law. We try to have a special show that dives into natural law. The way I prefer, because natural law is the politically correct way, but it's just a short way to put it into a itinerary. But it's actually, the framers called it the law of nature and nature's God, because that's how they referred to it. We call it natural law today because people are insulted to hear this thing called God. And so that was actually a secular migration of referring to it in that context specifically and avoiding the use of God. Now, American republicanism is something we dive into a lot, but we do go over this. So I'm going to do my best to make sure we highlight these things so that when you're going through the course, or I should say when you're going through the course of the year and you're looking at all of our shows, these things will jump out at you so that when we talk about it, you go, you know, I need to listen to that again. The Assumption Act is another thing we cover. Actually, we cover the ratification base. So let me kind of help you understand this. The Tory Acts kind of set up the stage for, you know, the beginning of the revolution. And that's why we give you the scale of liberty and the struggle that the framers had over these concepts. We also talk about how they used the law of nature, nature's. So this is kind of an evolutionary process, and we dive into the American republicanism and the revolution. And then we go into the ratification debates as we build up to the Constitution. Then we kind of cover the Assumption Act, the cod fishery bounties, Madison's essay on property. This is one we missed this year. We didn't cover that. We should have. And then we covered the Whiskey Rebellion. And then we cover the 1798 resolutions, and we also dive into republicanism again a little bit more. We missed so far this year. I don't think we covered the Enabling Acts to any detail, the Missouri Compromise, the Monroe Doctrine, Manifest Destiny, or even the vetoes, the presidential vetoes of the Department of Transportation. I know we didn't cover Madison's letter to John G. Jackson. Nor did we cover the establishment of the Department of Home, is what we call the Department of Interior today. So these things, we're literally going to make sure we cover these things before we dive into the ratification debates of the summer. And what we want to do in the ratification debates this coming year is really trim them down. We want to really trim them down to just the key highlights, because we've gone over this for a few years now, I think for 3-4 years, where I've either read through them, Paul and I have read through them, and then this coming year, it'll be Tammy and I, we're just going to go through all of those key things. And what we'll probably do is we may try something different. We may actually try to go through, instead of reading them one at a time, reading them by subject between one state, the next state, the next state, the next state, then the next subject, next state, next state. So we cover the topic across the states instead of covering, you know, one full state at a time. This way we can try to trim this down to where it doesn't take 3-4 months. Because I understand that there's a lot of other things we need to cover. But I think it's very important you understand and you hear for yourself how important those ratification debates are. So when we dive into the additional stuff, we also cover the Constitution and its amendments. One of the things that we did cover this year, that we're making sure we do this as a special show, is the Federalist Papers and Hamilton's treason in what he did with the Federalist Papers and how he elevated them for the jurist to cling to them and use them as a weapon against our Constitution. We also are going to now cover for the first time the Organic Act and the treaty with Britain. If we don't get to it before the end of the year, we will get to it at the beginning of the year, because it is that important. We need everybody to understand, and we need to put it up front, that this was the beginning of the true illegitimate direction and the illegitimate morphing of our government to what we see today. Okay, so we're going to cover that. We also cover a lot of other miscellaneous topics, such as First Amendment petitions and why they're so important. You hear us talking about them all the time. They are the weapon. They're the constitutional weapon. Now, you hear people talking about all sorts of things from nullification, convention of states, affidavits. Those, even though the convention of states is in the Constitution, that is very specific for changing the Constitution. It is not a weapon to keep and force federal government into compliance. We also cover common law and those types of topics, which we're kind of covering now. We dive into the problems, such as the paths, identifying the party, the courts, and all of those types of things. Then we also cover, like I already stated, we cover the holidays from Labor Day, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and so forth. We also try to cover these other things, and I'm going to try to have to figure these out so I can lay out the curriculum for this coming year, because I'm not sure how much longer we'll be doing this show. Who knows? But I want to make sure that we really lay out a full, tight curriculum that you're going to get. We're going to cover these things. We're going to cover the Scopes trial. We're going to cover basically the education system and the atrocities such as sex education, critical race theory, and so forth as a part of the creation of Hugh. In other words, that is a kind of a combined topic because when they created the Health, Education, and Welfare Department, they basically, that's when they weaponized the federal government in indoctrinating children. The concept of how they actually marched this war, I'm calling this war on religion in the school system and everything else. What they really did was they actually had the Scopes trial, and then they started removing the Bible and prayer and so forth. We're going to get into engineering, which is completely a very broad subject, but this is where the government is going into things like geoengineering, social engineering, and so forth. The education system, again, there's a lot to cover, but I think it's really important to also talk about the Bolshevik Revolution, because the Bolshevik Revolution became the template of how to basically overcome a nation. And instead of actually using an armed revolution in America, they know they couldn't do this because way too many people have guns, way too many. They don't want to go down that path. So what they're doing is they're using social pressure and social violence and so forth to create the Bolshevik Revolution. And it's taking them a long time. But the real reason why we haven't flipped as a nation is because they need to get the whole world ready to accept America flipping and this global government. Normalizing sexual perversion, again, that's a part of the education system. Quantifying patriotism for the Constitution and radical and perverting patriotism regarding social democracy and even party, I'll just call it party agendas. And so there's lots of these little nuances that we try to cover. We try to tuck those into these topics. So that's our challenge, to give you this in 1 year so that you can get enough academic information, reading these things from the framers, as well as seeing the empirical data, because some of this is actually just pointing out the empirical data of what they've done. And it's not like we're just making these editorial comments that, oh, well, they've done these things. We're actually going to give you the details of what happened, like the Scopes trial, and so forth and so on. So anyway, the other thing that we also need to, I want to dive into, and I haven't said this in a long time, is that the application of money to government is the same as to the grassroots movement. In other words, when you have people coming in to pay money into your grassroots, your party, whether it be this at the state level and then out the county level, because we see this play out in Washington. There's this thing called the mainstream Republicans. They're the largest holders of contributions and controlling money coming into the party. And they constantly keep Washington's Republican Party blue. they're maintaining and ensuring that rhinos are the ones that are getting elected and elevated. We have to make sure that we need to actually start creating relationships as we start going down this path of creating county, constitutional counties and so forth. We need to make a plea to all businesses that they're, you know, we can't allow the contributions coming in that are influencing the party, which is forcing the people to vote a certain way. We have to create this movement to, one, change the fact that money should not be the driver. But more importantly, we actually have to make sure that businesses start getting the message that if they're supporting constitutional compliance, not advantages. We see constantly the bigger businesses are paying money to obtain advantages, to take your home from you, all sorts of things that they shouldn't be doing. We need the small businesses to say, you need to contribute, because as we move towards making all elections local, it's going to make it hard for these big businesses to be able to contribute. The contributions that really matter may not be just financial. It may actually be that these businesses, because we see how important it was in every presidential election, how the unions are going to support the Democratic candidate. And that means that if you're a union member, you need to vote that way. Well, it's the same thing with other businesses and so forth, that all of these construction businesses that may not be union, they're just building homes and so forth, all of them support these constitutional candidates because they're the most qualified, because they understand the Constitution and they're all about full support of the Constitution. We need to take away the agenda of the party. And if we get the business to start focusing on it, we will actually force the party itself to become focused on constitutional compliance. Because if you want the money, then you're going to have to start testing. If you want the money, you're going to have to start doing these things. And that's where the businesses can contribute. They can say, yeah, we're going to give you money, but we're going to give you money for vetting this very specific thing so that you actually vet the candidates and test them. And then you promulgate those tests so that we can actually choose and we can actually get behind and support those who test best. Folks, we have to start changing our paradigms and we have to start breaking the status quo. So finally, what I'm now kind of going to dive into, because we've been covering this for quite a while, is Timber Nation. And I know we're coming into, you know, Thanksgiving and Black Friday and everything else. And so if you haven't seen the custom work that they did on my studio, I'll just say desk center, studio center, and the mixing box and so forth. I mean, it's, you know, when you look at somebody's, you know, workstation or where they work, it may be in a disarray, but that is a beautiful, solid walnut desk. And I forget what I paid for it, but I know if I would have gone anywhere else, because I actually looked, just to buy the material and for me to do itself, I could barely do it cheaper. If I hired somebody at minimum wage to do that work for me, I could barely, you know, cover the same cost as what they're doing, because they have processes and so forth. And so so at this point, what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to introduce you to the owner of Timber Nation, because you've heard me promoting Timber Nation for a long time, and I was doing these promos, and I stopped that, but I realized that since they've actually, well, actually, let's talk about it, because we got Matt, the owner, with us. Hey, Matt, welcome to the show.
Hey, great to be on here.
So you guys were burnt down. When did that happen? And it'll speak just real quickly to the magnitude of the damage you suffered.
Yes, it was 2 years ago, October 2022. There was a fire that started in the back corner of the shop, and it blew out the roof pretty much the whole way. Luckily, we had a firefighter that covered our machines for us, so that was recovered well.
Okay.
But then we had the roof redone, all the electrical work redone, And that took about 4 months until we could get in there and get started working again.
And so the origin of the fire was arson, right?
It was never declared because my grandfather, the previous owner, he's very old school, and he didn't have building insurance.
I see.
So they don't really care to find out. But
they're not going to spend the money because insurance isn't demanding that they do so.
Right. But the signs on the wall kind of said, it was arson.
All indications are. Okay. So, So you got burnt down and you had, if I remember correctly, like 40 some orders, something like that.
We did, yes. And we had a good lead time, 8 weeks only, and then 4 months of no work. I mean, we did little work in a friend's garage, but that was about it.
Yeah.
But 4 months of no work, it brought our lead time the whole way back to 18 weeks.
Right. Now, so this, let me just say this, because one of the things you told me when we talked before was that the standing orders that you have were probably customers that really wanted what they wanted, and they probably been doing business with you. I think I was one of them. But nevertheless, not one of those customers, you know, basically said, you know, give me my money back. They basically, they supported you. All right.
They did. There was not one person that asked for a refund, and they said they're fine with waiting, and they trusted our quality of work, so that was a big thank you to them.
Right. So with that, you've basically kind of slowly started recovering. Now, a standard lead time is about 2 months then for a custom order or for any kind of order?
For rack orders, so big rack orders.
Big rack orders, okay.
Right now it's 10 to 12 weeks, so.
Okay.
We got that the whole way back down from 18.
Okay. So what can you do? Because I got about 2 minutes before I hit a break, and you're more than welcome to stay over the break. But what is it? Because I've been telling people, you know, get yourself some some nice solid wood furniture. Because as I've done the pricing, and before we even had this conversation, I was leading into this conversation with you that I've actually looked to go out and buy the material myself because I've done woodworking. I can't do it anymore because of my health. But, you know, hiring somebody to do the labor and everything else is just no way I could do it and beat your cost. And so, you know, to me, that's a huge indictment. I mean, well, I'm not trying to tell you to raise your prices, you know, sky high. But, you know, to me, that really means that your profits are perfect because anybody that does any due diligence, if you're not a craftsman yourself, you can't do this type of work. And I know you guys have had recommendations in the past. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go ahead and hold you over because we're about a minute into the break or a minute going into the break. But going into this before the fire, I believe you guys were recommended by the Absolute Sound.
Yeah, yes, we did. We won a Golden Ear Award with Absolute Sound, actually.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And we had a nice article in there about us, too.
Yeah, and it definitely put some wind in your sails. And so, you know, getting and as I look at it today, the way small businesses have been devastated, the fact that you guys haven't been devastated because of COVID and everything else is another indictment because at least there's enough demand to keep you in business. So what I'm going to do, if you don't mind, can I hold you over?
Yeah.
Okay, because we're about to go into break and you're not even really going to hear anything. But we'll go into break and it'll probably be about a minute and a half, 2 minutes before we bring you back, but just hang on and we will be right back because folks, I just want to give you some, because for him to list the things that you can order between now and Christmas and still get a Christmas delivery or around that time, then you can, if you're interested, I just wanted to make sure you heard it from the horse's mouth. So anyway, we will be right back with Matt in just about a minute and a half. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so one of the things I need to kind of get into is the fact that you guys have this this ability to actually, you know, provide custom type of work. What does it take to do that before we get into what you can do? And because I you know, I've told people that you can probably do anything if you submit the plan. So what kind of plans do you need, or what type of detail do you need for the custom work that you guys can support?
For custom work, first of all, we need the wood type you would like.
Okay.
Next, the dimensions, the kind of design that you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
I can do drawings myself, or you can send in a drawing yourself.
Uh-huh.
And I guess just creativity. I mean,
okay.
This is my grandfather started the custom work, and uh-huh. I learned all the creativity from him. So it's
Okay. Great. Well, because everything I give you probably is really custom, because most people, when they really look at the application, I mean, people try to, you know, build based on what you get them or what you guys have. But, you know, as you know, we all have unique demands. And it's, if you know somebody that can actually create, you know, whether it be wall shelves, and I'm actually looking forward to getting that one computer station, because all my music and all my content is online, as well as I own it. I have the albums, I have the CDs, Blu-ray, what have you. And
right.
So I actually have the content to play, but I also have it all online, so that when I'm doing something, I want to create a cue, I could just play the music. And so I've got you doing this custom wall mount for a computer station, for a monitor, keyboard, mouse, that will actually go into a built-in cabinet into the wall where the computer and all the stuff is that it'll interface with. So it kind of seems completely transparent. And, you know, this is, it's unique. I know it's something, I can't wait to see it, because I know you guys are working on it now. So anyway, and I'm sure you'll want to put pictures of it up. Have you seen the picture I sent you of the broadcast station?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
go ahead.
It's awesome.
Yeah, so I actually have that on my website, on my Red State Talk Radio podcast page, because I put it in a PDF so people could kind of see the work. And the nice thing was that, you know, when working with you at the time, you and your dad, or your grandfather, I'm sorry, we went with the dark walnut and a blonde oak shelves to create the contrast, which actually, that's really, I think it jumps out. But anyhow. What can you actually, if you were taking orders between now and December, what could you actually satisfy as far as orders go?
So right now, to get it before Christmas, I would say platforms, speaker stands, cutting boards, end tables.
Okay. And all this stuff comes, basically it's RTA, ready to assemble pack, right?
Right.
Most of it. Some of it, you know, maybe a cutting board.
We basically glue everything up ourselves.
Yeah.
There's no...
Yeah, I'm not saying a cutting board they'd have to glue in. No, I'm saying like the speaker stands, racks, anything that has multiple parts that, you know, screw together. It basically comes ready to assemble, and so that way they just boom. And you use these number codes so that they know exactly what type of screw to go here and there. So anyway, okay, so it's really just the smaller stuff, but no end tables and things like that then?
No, end tables are, that can make it out before Christmas.
Okay, all right. All right.
I think just racks are basically the only thing that we can't get before Christmas.
And if you can get the wood, then they can have, you know, they can have that. It's just the cost. Because, folks, when you really get into the exotic woods, it does get really expensive. But anyway, I appreciate you coming on. And what I'd do is like to probably have you on again after the holiday. And hopefully this kind of helps, because I know you're a grandfather and you guys are patriots. You're out there in Pennsylvania. And what's really amazing, folks, is even though you pay for shipping, including the shipping and what you're getting in the product, like I said, I cannot have somebody do that with my supervision paying them minimum wage. I can't beat that price. So anyway, I appreciate your time and God bless and good luck. And hopefully you guys are overcome by orders to where you start yelling at me and say, stop it. I understand that if you actually get to a point, you'll probably have a labor issue because there's only so much labor in the country where you live in Pennsylvania, right?
That is true, yeah.
Yes, okay. So we'd like to cause good problems for you. Anyway, all right. Well, God bless. Happy Thanksgiving and Merry Christmas to you. Thank you again.
Yep, thank you, Jar.
You bet.
God bless.
No problem. You bet. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, so folks, what we want to get into now is because on Mondays I try to talk about, not criticize, but I try to dive into things that really, if we had a constitutional president, I'm just hoping that President Trump has people listening to the show, because I know... Because I criticize the John Birch Society, I know they listen, and so they're out there, and they're actually trying to, you know, because I pressured them that they're not getting involved in certain things, so they started supporting nullification. They've actually responded organizationally, which, okay, you know, so they're trying to get involved, I think, in election integrity as well now, but... What's important, what we're trying to do, is trying to hopefully send the message, because if America understands what a constitutional president can do, then maybe we'll actually get a president doing something that is, one, constitutional and better for America, because those presidents really care, right? So, let me pull it up, because I've got all of these different things here. So the one thing that I need to put in now, because this is something that needs to be done at the very beginning as well, because we already talked about the currency, and then we dove into this last time, we spoke about the removal from the UN, right? So currency, our finances, and that was just very specifically sending the message that we're not going digital and we're going back to gold and silver. The next thing that we covered was we are ending our involvement and adjoining to all of these different foreign nations, whether, you know, these foreign conglomerates, the UN, NATO, or these other governing agencies, the World Health Organization, whether they're under the umbrella of the UN or they're autonomous, it doesn't matter, like the World Bank. So as we start looking at, you know, moving a constitutional president moving forward and sending the message that he is truly going to support the Constitution and execute those laws that are constitutional and actually start sending messages to Congress. He had this. So this is what he has to do simultaneously. Simultaneously, the president, a constitutional president, needs to literally start sending direct messages and actually going out to the states by appealing to them. Excuse me. We need a constitutional president to actually stand in front of the state legislature. So he needs to go on a nationwide tour, even out to Hawaii, you know, and suffer the slings and arrows of Hawaii, right? And, you know, stand in front of each state's legislature and let them know that he cannot do, you know, he cannot get the government back into the framework. He can actually do certain things, but if he actually got rid of the Department of Education, some other tyrant right after his presidency, or if he downsized whatever, it can be undone. We need the states. He's got to educate the state legislatures, and he has to start this whirlwind tour, or I should say nationwide tour, in the dark red states. The first state he needs to go to and stand in front of is Wyoming. The next state is South Dakota, probably, and then some of these other states. He needs to make sure he hits all of these state legislatures while they're in session, and then actually do it a couple of times, and whether he's there physically one time and then virtually the rest of the times, or virtually speaking. One of the things that he actually needs to do as a part of this, because this is actually my second book, the states need to actually start creating virtual secure comms, and he needs to probably help the federal government getting those types of secure comms so that the states can talk and communicate without the federal government or any other government listening to what they're talking about. Not that they need this, not that this needs to be secret. They need to actually have full transparency, but the last thing they need to do is have their communications interrupted by denials of service or what have you. Because if you have an autonomous system where you're going kind of point to point over crypto and so forth, there you can't actually deny those systems and shut them down. There's other ways you can, but I'm just saying you can't hack them that way. But bottom line is that he needs to actually help educate them. So this is one of the reasons why we're making a highlight out of these resolutions so that you can read these things. This is why we're reading these things, so you can read along. Your legislators can read along. Why we're isolating content for very specific days so that we really try to focus on this. Even though I have a radio show that I do this with Tammy, I'm actually doing this with other groups. And so we're creating a very focused conversation in reading the Kentucky resolutions, the Virginia resolutions of 98, then the Kentucky resolutions of 99. And now we're going into the Virginia report, or Madison's report on the Virginia resolutions. And then we're going to go into Madison's notes on nullification to actually prove and give you the empirical data that there should be no concept of single state nullification. It's one thing for a state not to have its government directly affected. So in other words, when the federal government comes along and they have already realigned your counties into legislative districts to say thou shalt do these things, every state right now actually can challenge that change. Every state can do that because all they've got to do is go back to the court, because it's not nullification, because it's not Congress doing it. It's the Supreme Court making that ruling, and every state has the constitutional authority to say, sorry, Supreme Court, you didn't have jurisdiction in Baker v. Carr, nor did you have jurisdiction in Reynolds v. Sims. Those things were not that the Republican form of government isn't just not justiciable. You didn't even have jurisdiction over the key issues of the appeal of these people's right, because there's nothing in the Constitution that guarantees equality of a vote. Sorry, it's not there. So the states actually have the right to take a stand and say, look, our form of Republican form of government recognizes sovereignties of our government. We are not democracies where everybody, one person, one vote, is to be equal. You've got counties that have what we would call high populations, they actually will have a higher a higher representation for King County or Seattle and these big city metropolis areas because you have a high population there. But every county has equal representation in the Senate. And so the Senate is the stopgap to keep the democracy. That was the whole design of our Republican form of government, with bicameral legislative bodies representing the sovereigns, the people being represented in the House and the counties being represented in the Senate. The Senate and those representatives of those county legislators actually would be keeping the democracy from invoking all of these stupid and unconstitutional laws. So anyway, if Trump actually starts going out and actually helping these state legislatures understand, one of the things, he doesn't necessarily have to do it, but he needs to be the champion of it. He needs to basically call upon them, you need to do these things and listen to G.R. Mobley. Listen to all of these different academics that are telling you that you have the authority to force the federal government into compliance. And I, in his messaging, he needs to basically say, I am not going to use the bureaucracy or the standing armies of these bureaucratic arms that the federal government has unconstitutionally created to come after you, to stop you. We're going to leave you unattested and unmolested over the next 4 years under my presidency. Please take advantage of this tranquility that we will be affording you to do your job. Folks, you want to see something happen in 4 years, something big? This is something that Trump can do. This is something that any person that wants to actually make America great again and get rid of all of this federal tyranny, this is what he can do. Now, I'm hoping, and I'm okay with anybody wanting to send me hate mail, go on Facebook and write a post on G.R. Mobley's post page. That's fine. But I will read it if you're not willing to come on, because I told everybody, and I will, if you contact me, I will do everything possible to make sure that we address your grievance or address your questions or what have you. And for the most part, I have done that. And sometimes I try to do it via email, but I've not been so good at doing that email because I'm just too busy, because doing the show is something I have to do 5 days a week. And the personal time that it takes to sit down and send emails out to all the personal people that need feedback or content. So what I'll either do is I'll send you an email, or I'm hoping that you're listening. So anyway, one of the things that we can start praying for is more hours in the day. I mean, maybe get the earth to spin a little bit slower so that we have 28, 30 hours in the day, so I can still get a good night's sleep and have more time to get work done. But if that can't happen, then things have to fall off the plate a little bit. And that's just the nature of things. As things keep moving and as Reclaiming the Republic keeps growing, and I have to thank you. I am a very rich man when it comes to the great people that have stepped forward in participating in Reclaiming the Republic. This is not an organization. This is not about buying a franchise, paying money, becoming a subscriber, nothing like that. This is all about unifying and working. We're here to work with you and others and pull everybody to the table regarding full compliance to the Constitution. No agendas, none. Getting our public servants to hold them accountable and do their job. That simple. Now, what I'm hoping to do coming up is I'm actually hoping to do interviews as well, because one of the things that I just had the privilege of talking to Ron Bouchard over the weekend, and I think he kind of explained his affidavits, but what I want to do is I want to continue doing this conversation with him, and I would like to have him come in, hopefully after he reads, because I'd like him, because I already did on the show, I've done this comparison between their invasion affidavit and our petition, And I would like to actually, you know, get him to make that comparison. And then, you know, because maybe there's a reason why he didn't include those things that we thought were absolutely necessary. Absolutely necessary to place full constitutional context onto that issue of the invasion on the southern border and what needs to be done. And so, anyway, but what I'm trying, I'm not trying to beat people up. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create full constitutional arguments, and I'm more than willing to share these things so that anybody and everybody can use these. That every organization, they can tuck these things into their affidavits if they're trying to go down this path. At least they're making the full context. They're creating the full context to the matter as they present it. And so maybe I'm wrong. I'm okay with being wrong, but you know I love being right. So if there's something I'm doing wrong that somebody can help me, then absolutely, because I'm going to make those changes. Because I like being right. And I think everybody does. I think everybody likes to be right. So, therefore, it's all about process improvement and, you know, change and those types of things. So, anyway, we've covered the tyranny and we've covered, you know, Trump making America great. So, let me get back into this conversation regarding common law. One of the things I didn't get into is I wrote down when they defined civil law. This is a basic definition of civil law. Civil law is based upon case law. This is its role, or basically its upper definition. Its case law is a collection of judicial decisions that serve as precedents for resolving disputes in civil law. The definition is this: case law is based on judicial decisions rather than statutes, regulations, or constitutions. In other words, you create the Constitution, you create statutes and laws, but the body of the law, the enforcement of the law, and all of that is thrown into due process where the courts assume full control and ultimately the outcomes. They control the outcomes. And so, as it says here, rather than statutes, regulations, or constitutions, it is also known as, they're calling this also known as common law. Civil law is basically this idea where the judges have common law. Now, or I should say, the judges create all the decisions and ultimately they control the outcome. And they're saying that that is common law. Well, so common law, no, that's common law maybe under the Bible, where the judges actually, under Moses' time, the judges had the ultimate say because that was a theocracy. Now, in England, it was kind of a little bit of a hybrid theocracy because it was a monarchical theocracy, and where the prophet, where Moses was the one that had the ultimate say, or the, you know, the final say in this reign of judges, you know. And we all know the story of King Solomon, right, where the dispute from, you know, way down into the trenches of Israel, these two women were fighting over the same baby, and nobody could resolve the issue. We got all the way up to the king, and King Solomon basically said, well, then I'm going to cut the baby in half so each of you can, you know, have your half of the baby, since you're both claiming it. And the true mother said, no, I'd rather the baby live so she can have it, and was surrendering the baby, and then he gave the baby to the mother. The wisdom of Solomon. And so, in other words, in the system of common law back then, it was controlled by judges. Yes. Common law is a process. And actually, when you really look at civil law and common law, these are two laws that are basically the foundation of keeping law and order for the government that has been framed. So this is what's so important that we need to understand, where civil law is actually where government has full control. What I mean by this is when we look at a secular government where it's not a monarch and nor is it a theocracy, they act as most secular governments around the world today are communism or socialism, and they are void of a bloodline and they're void of a religion. They're secular, and so they create their own laws because they have general powers. There is no restriction on government. That is pretty much the common law, civil law that they've created. In common law, Britain got to common law because they noticed that civil law was in basically entrenched in the Catholic Church. It wasn't entrenched in the Bible. It was entrenched in the Catholic Church and basically allowed the judges to be the ultimate say. In the British common law, they use the Bible as the supreme law of the land. And so when you read Blackstone's, you could challenge any law or anything that was coming from the king and or anybody that was trying to create law or enforce something if it violated the Bible, thus it being a theocracy. In America, we actually had theocracies in every state. Every state had, and it wasn't a true theocracy. The states had a companionship or a direct relationship with the church, but there was no coronation. In other words, the Anglican Church of the five states that were Anglican and had Anglican churches or Episcopal churches at the time, those states, the governors were not anointed, they were just elected, and they were not coronated by the archbishop of that state's church. In other words, there was this separation. There was a symbiotic relationship, though, because the government, as it taxed the people, would give a little bit of, you know, there wasn't an established, you know, you get this much, you get a percentage or anything like that. The church, when it needed it, because the state needed to pour out a little bit of compassion, the state would actually help fund that church to do the compassionate services, educating people, welfare, taking care of people that were hit by, you know, natural disaster, what have you. That was the church's job, compassionate services. Government had nothing to do with it. And we actually see and understand this by cing through the bounty, the cod fishery bounties and other statements that Madison made in the early days of the Constitution. Bottom line, when we evolved away from Britain, we basically maintained a magistrate form of government, and ergo, we didn't have, at the Confederacy, they did not have a religion either, nor could they create one. Let me just say this. I don't think that there was a First Amendment Establishment Clause against the Confederation. I don't remember. But bottom line, that actually became the application when we look at the First Amendment, because they wanted to make sure that the federal government would never go down that path, even though it was never delegated. So what we'll do when we come back on Friday is I'm going to dive back into you know, this evolution of government and how common law had to evolve to support the new government. I'm G.R. Mulvey, Reclaiming the Republic, and we'll be back.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process. This is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.